Welcome back.
Welcome back.
We have been choppy at best with the podcast frequency recently.
Yeah. Well, it's because there's too many people who are listening who haven't bought prep in business yet, so we're like, well, fuck them.
We've had a lot happen in the last couple of months.
We have.
I know that's a classic excuse for not going to the gym or not working with a business coach or whatever else, but
we have actually had a lot happen.
It has been mad. Yeah,
well, the team's tripled. Yeah, so that is a UK employment law minefield.
We've just been drowning in paperwork, but some very exciting things to come.
Yeah,
for you, my dear listener. So
mainly for us, but also for you.
So there's a few exciting unveilments that have come out in the last few weeks in the world of tech.
Is that a word? Unveilments?
I don't know. Unveileries?
We'll let it go.
Unveilement, I think, is the correct word. All of them will have some impact on the world of online coaching. Well, two of them will. One of them will be more just entertainment. First one, and I'm gutted about this. I was going to show you the video of this, Johnny, because you hadn't actually seen the trailer, and it's been taken down. But I'll recreate it for you. Would that be nice?
With the same like cinematic quality?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Okay.
So, picture the scene. It's a guy on an Olympic track, and he's on his marks. He's setting down. You can't see his face, and the camera's just focusing on his bulging hamstrings. And there's a voiceover that's, "I am the fastest 100-meter runner that you've ever seen. I've beaten Usain Bolt's time by 0.8 seconds, but nobody knows my face, and nobody knows my name. This is the Enhanced Olympics. I have been shunned by the sporting community because of my drug use, but I am pushing the limits of human performance, but nobody knows who I am. My identity is secret." And it's just that kind of thing rotating through like an archer and a runner and all this stuff. And it's basically somebody who has taken it on themselves to run the Enhanced Games in 2024.
That's so exciting, isn't it?
Isn't it? He has been vilified. He will be vindicated. Come watch him compete at the 2024 Enhanced Games. The world isn't ready for him. The Olympics hate him. He's the fastest man in the world.
So this is a guy that actually exists.
Oh.
You found the video, haven't you? You just found the video.
After my cinematic render, I mean, mine's better anyway, but for the sake of completeness.
I am the fastest man in the world. But you've never heard of me. I have broken Usain Bolt's 100-meter record, but I can't show you my face. I am a proud, enhanced athlete. The Olympics hate me. I need your help to come out. I need your help to stop hate. I need your help for the world to embrace science. Come join me in 2024 at the first Enhanced Games and see me break the world record in public.
Like, I've got the measure of it. I think I know what's happening. So is this this isn't like a sanctioned thing by the, whatever the sanctioning body would be, the Olympic Committee, I assume.
Well, someone's just set up their own sanctioning body and just said, do what you want.
Because the problem, I suppose the problem with anything like this is that, like, so you've seen the same happen in powerlifting and in CrossFit. As they've become more popular, the standard has just gone crazy. So, like, especially in CrossFit, as people were making like serious money at the top of the sport, it attracted a much higher standard of everything. With something like this, unless it's either like an actual Olympic gold medal or there's mega prize money, there's going to be loads of people taking loads of drugs with really high levels of performance who just think, oh, I can't be bothered. Loads of work, loads of prep. Do you see what I mean?
That what people who are taking drugs are going to be like, not going to bother.
Well, so like, I think the reason, a lot of the reason why people like enter these big competitions is either the prestige. So there's a lot of history and heritage around winning that thing, or there's a lot of money on the line, or maybe both. So this bit with this being new, I think the first round of it, either like if it's still running in 5 years' time and someone's sponsoring it and there's a bunch of prize money, then I think we'll see some really, truly mental things in it.
So the way I see this is like, historically, let's say running, because that's the example they used in the trailer. Mm-hmm. 1910, before steroids are a thing, I assume, you've got people running as fast as they can. Someone goes like, oh, I'm going to wear shoes when I'm running. And people go, yeah, okay, that's all right. And then like things go along. And then eventually like steroids are invented and we find that they improve your performance. And someone decides along that journey to go, oh, you can wear shoes and you can run on a nice track and whatever, but, and you can drink as much water as you want, but no, you can't use that thing. Mm. And then they created this split. And then over time you've got like steroidy runners and normal runners. The opposite happened with strongman. Nobody watches natural strongman because it's boring.
Is it even a thing? Does it exist?
Well, there we go. It's because the same split happened, and somewhere along the way, someone was like, oh, this drug really helps to lift the big rock and put it on the thing and pull the car with your knob, or drag the ship with your ears or whatever. That's the strongman event, isn't it?
Well, that's the slogan. On New Year's Day, when it's like, welcome to SBD's World's Strongest Man, that's just beneath that is pull a car with your knob, pull a ship with your ears.
And all of that is only possible because of steroids. And so they're just like, yeah, let's go for it.
It's interesting though, isn't it? The expectations gap that exists, because I don't know whether you have this, but pretty much every single year around Christmas time when they put all the Strongest Man stuff on TV, someone will say, oh, Johnny, what can you do on that? I'm like, nowhere close. Like, not even in the same, when there's a guy like doing 8 reps with a 360 kilo deadlift on an axle from an uneven surface,
like a bleeding out his nose. And he's like,
yeah. It's like, what, how strong are you compared to that? Not even in the same like conversation as that. And they're like, well, what's he doing that you're not? I'm like, probably quite a lot of things. Probably if we looked at a blood panel of me and him, it would probably look quite different. I'm sure he feels on a daily basis probably pretty good. Maybe quite out of breath and a bit hot, but
like, yeah, maybe his life expectancies are quite a few years shorter, but for now he feels good. So
I bet he feels pretty good. Yeah, but my point is, it's interesting that that's just been normalized. So like, that's an enhanced event, and it's on TV at like totally family watching times, and it doesn't say anywhere like, by the way, some of these guys are on a shitload of testosterone. it's just wow, look how strong they are. So to your point, why is it that we have to watch this sort of like neutered version of other sports?
Weird, isn't it? It's just slipped by. And like the same with bodybuilding. Like, yeah, there's a little bit more of an awareness of natural bodybuilding, but it's still nowhere, like no one knows who the top natural bodybuilders are in the world, like in the general population. But everyone knows who Ronnie Coleman or Kai Greene or all these people are. So it's
good point.
And the problem with bodybuilding is it's almost become a sport of like, how many drugs can you fit in your body before something breaks?
Well, it's the same thing with powerlifting, I suppose, isn't it? Like, if you think of going to a gym and ask someone like, name a powerlifter, they might mention like Ed Cohen, for example, who probably wasn't natural during the time he was competing. A lot of the guys who are like just lifting the crazy, crazy numbers, Jim, and even like the Jim Wendlers, the Dave Tates, they're all just using as much stuff as they possibly can from a drugs perspective and an equipment perspective to move the most weight possible. But in running, for example, it's like, well, you can run from this point to this point, but you must follow these like really strict rules that just prevent you from running. Like, Like, let's see like an 8 second 100 meters. That'd be fun to watch, wouldn't it?
Well, this is it. It would be fun to watch. And I think that alone is what's going to cause this to get some real traction. Unless, like, there's some kind of equally powerful, like, moral movement that says, no, we can't do that because whatever. And, you know, obviously health effects and it becomes a bit of a circus. But we've seen in other sports where drugs are allowed that it's infinitely more entertaining. So it's probably going to go down that route.
Well, it's also assuming that the current Olympics is no drug use.
So maybe it might not be that different.
I think that'll be the most interesting, won't it?
If it's a like total free-for-all, what happens?
Mm-hmm. It's the Tom Martin comparison, isn't it? Where Tom Martin, for those people who don't know, was competing in a tested powerlifting federation and was often accused of taking drugs and had the British deadlift record and was winning, consistently winning.
Well, he beat you in Dover.
Massively, yeah. I think he opened with more than my third attempt on deadlift. So while eating a croissant, held the British record in deadlift for years, very, very long time. And everyone was like, and everyone's hypothesizing that he's on water-based drugs and very low levels and he's tapering down. And so then he was like, right. Well, I don't think he made the decision for this reason, but he decided to move federations. Now he looks like, I mean, he just looks like an android, to be honest. Like he doesn't look human. He's so lean and muscular. He's 100 kilos or so. And his deadlift went from like 350 to like 420. You're like, okay, he was probably natural initially. And so like really we should be seeing the same. If we don't see the same thing happen, then everyone in the Olympics is rumbled.
That's a great perspective. So yeah, if we don't see a big jump, then something's gone awry with the drug testing in the Olympics.
Are you back?
Are we back?
I'm back, yeah.
Nice. The other exciting development, which I think both of us are like, shut up and take my money as soon as it lands, is the Apple Vision Pro. So for anyone that's not seen the release of this, it's Apple's answer to the Oculus Quest and all these other kind of VR headsets. It looks very Apple. It looks like a pair of ski goggles with a little wire and a battery pack that you put in your pocket. So it's, you know, plus 10 dork points. But my goodness, it's designed as a augmented reality headset. So you can look around and basically see the room around you, but digital items and apps and everything are like floating around you. So you can work as using an external monitor, but just looking around, and the controller doesn't exist. It's just your eyes. So it just detects what you're looking at. And then you just do that with your fingers to click on something, and you can have your hands wherever you want, because there's cameras all around it. So it's looks like a very slick piece of design. And then there's all these other implications of, you know, what's that going to do to humanity? And are we all going to be just like living in these kind of isolated bubbles? You can sit and watch a film in your front room without a TV, and someone next to you could be watching a different film, but you kind of both in your own little bubble. And there's a thing about like taking photos, but the photos are now immersive memories. And the one that they showcased in the advert was a dad taking a memory of his 5-year-old girl on her 5th birthday party and just blowing out the candles. And it's a really like lovely kind of family magical experience. But what they don't show is that the reality of that is not this like lovely immersive 3D thing. It's dad is sat there with these goggles going like, and like everyone's like, dad, can you be with us rather than having these googly eyes on your headset.
Well, so just to throw it back at you then. So firstly, I didn't realize it looked at your eye movement and that's how it tracked where you were looking. That's very advanced. The thing of like, what's it going to do to humanity? I would argue like that shift's happening anyway, and will probably continue to happen, and it'll just happen with screens. So like somebody sat looking at their phone, disengage in a conversation is arguably worse than like two people, both with one of these on, sharing an experience or something like that, or like playing a game or whatever it is, right? So I don't think that's necessary. I mean, if it's where we're going anyway, then I think it's a better version of that personally, because it still encourages someone to sort of be engaged with the world rather than like scrolling on the phone. I realize it's like, it's, will it just mean that everybody stays in the house and doesn't leave the house and doesn't have real interactions? Maybe. But I suppose what I'm saying is like, that might just happen anyway, but without the immersiveness. So.
Yeah, possibly. And that's a very optimistic view. Like, that's quite a Zuckerberg view of the whole thing, is that it's going to connect us together, and that the whole, I guess that's why Meta as a social network are looking to build VR into their hardware and almost like integrate the full chain of stuff.
I think Oculus, I hope I'm not wrong with this, but I think they're releasing a new version of Oculus this year in time for Christmas that is AR. So it's like the one, the version that I bought a couple of years ago, which is VR. It's called the Quest 2, I think. Not the Quest Pro. That's the one with the, like, that looks at you as well as what's happening. I think the new version of the Quest, that's like the affordable version, like the PlayStation version, is now an AR equivalent rather than just VR. So they're clearly moving very quickly in the same direction. It'll be interesting to see who wins. And they're
both going to be released around the same time by the sound of it. So,
well, no, this is like, oh, is Apple going to release it this year? I thought it was like well into
January.
In the UK?
Oh, I don't know. I think they're only releasing like a million units, which I know sounds like a lot, but I think
they'll be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder how many iPhones sell on day one of release when they bring out the new model. It'll be, if it were just 100. A million, I'd be blown away, to be honest, if they just sold a million units on day one. So they'll go straight away. There'll be waiting lists, won't they? They'll be sold on eBay for 20 grand. And
well, yeah, I should say as well, it's retailing for 3.5 grand, which honestly, after seeing the trailer, I'm like, yeah, it's worth
it. I think that's great, to be honest. Like, that's less than I was expecting it would be. Because it's a laptop, right? Like, it has, unless I'm missing something, like you could use it as a laptop.
So it's got iOS, I think it's got like Vision OS built in, but if you have a MacBook and you wear the headset, you can look at your laptop and then just take it with you.
Right. So it's like a screen.
In your mind, I suppose.
What? You so look like, at your laptop and then it just loads your laptop onto the device.
Yeah, and then you can walk around and like you've got your laptop in your headset.
The entire functionality of the laptop?
Not sure.
So I thought it would work as a monitor, but it sounds like what you're saying is it just like takes that like up. All that's in me now.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's like remote accessing your laptop or if it's treating it as a new thing. Even still, same, I think, outcome, isn't it?
If you could just sit, there's like clips, isn't there, of people on planes on the like the demo footage of they're like sat on a plane and they've got a big screen in front of them and they're like, it's stuff like that I think is most, or even just like sat in your office and you've got sort of a document open here and a document open here and then your calendar open here and you're typing virtually. Oh.
That's what I'm most excited about. But yeah, like it'll make plane journeys a dream. Suddenly noise cancelling headphones and an immersive reality thing, like it's no longer an uncomfortable experience.
I heard Mark Zuckerberg talking about a problem they're having with like using AR with in a car. So like you're being driven to school, you're a kid, you're being driven to school and you want to like play a game on your AR headset. The problem that they are having is like the moving environment is causing the sensors to like be confused about what's happening. Like, is the person moving or is it just, they're having to work really hard to block out the movement. So if you're on a moving vehicle or like a plane, I guess is less relevant. But something where you can see in the window, like the environment passing you by. That's throwing the accuracy of the tracking off.
Oh God. So yeah, like listening to some of the engineers talk about it, like there's so much that they have to consider in just like making that work. But
it'll be weird to see what it does to like the thing I always wonder is like what will it do to like dating and like sexual relationships? And you know, if there's, if, 'cause like the proxy for those things is getting like closer and closer to reality. Mm. So much so that, like, because you know the whole concern of like people having fewer kids and fewer people getting married and all these sorts of things, is that just going to like really spike that if suddenly people can have like a full simulation of a relationship in an augmented version in their home? And then like the only thing you don't actually feel the physical intimacy, but everything else is like simulated. Will that just kill will that slowly kill humanity?
Yeah, like, is it going to drop off a cliff? There's none of the kind of arguments that you have with your spouse anymore. It's all just like a perfect virtual reality partner. Yeah, and like, you're right, there's going to be so many unpredicted consequences of this, particularly with, like, imagine combining all these different bits of tech that we have available. So there are GPT-based characters that are now being integrated into video games. So the NPCs of video games are now like GPT-powered. So you can go into have a chat with like the guy, the blacksmith pinging the thing in Skyrim and go and be like, hi, how's your day going? And just have like a proper conversation with him. So these things are starting to get bridged, and it's quite scary.
That is frightening.
So I guess in terms of like, what's the impact on humanity? Maybe we're all doomed. What's the impact on online coaching? is the next question. And I don't know about you, I'm pretty optimistic about this. And I'll explain why from a hardware perspective, and we can see how this kind of fits in. But the way that they've solved the FaceTime problem with VR headsets is rather, because obviously you've got something on your face. So how do you then see your face when you've got something on your face? And does that produce a weird FaceTime call? What it does is it uses a scanner to look at what your face looks like, and then it maps that and creates a 3D version of you to FaceTime with someone else remotely. And it looks like you're speaking to them in front of you. So that 3D version in the demo, like, it looks a little bit kind of like, it's a little bit odd, like the uncanny valley, but it'll, but it'll probably get there within 6 months.
Yeah. Well, imagine that in 2 years' time. It'll be seamless, won't it?
It'll be very tasty. So suddenly we're moving towards a much more personal experience that you can have with a coach. Like, you could potentially, for a price that's worthwhile, do remote PT in someone's house without having to physically be there. So from my perspective, I think it adds a dimension to online coaching that we haven't had before, rather than replacing it.
Well, it comes back to the core principle, doesn't it? Of like, what do people actually need? And they need basically to look bad in front of a human. They need to be like called out by a human when they do something wrong. So I use Macro Factor to track my nutrition, right? If I don't log, there's two ways that fails, right? One is I don't log, Macro Factor doesn't give a fuck, couldn't care less, right? Second thing is I log and I just eat too much. It also doesn't give a fuck and just adjusts my calories anyway. It's not assuming that I'm not adhering. It's not assuming that I'm like incorrectly tracking. If it's like, hang on, you say you've eaten a deficit, but your weight's gone up this week. Come on, mate. Doesn't do any of that. So like, no amount of tech can really, and even if it did, it's still just an app. It's just an app. It's just AI. It's just ChatGPT. But if like a person, if I look bad in front of a person that I'm paying, and I look bad in front of a group of other people who are also paying that person, and they're all doing really well and I'm not, yes, I suppose that could be simulated. But I just don't think that will, if it is a simulation and I know it's a simulation, I don't think that'll ever have the same grab on me as like, God, everyone else in this group's like smashing it and I'm the only one that isn't. I feel like an idiot. So if the AR equivalent of that can enhance that feeling and bring that closer to actually being with those people in the gym or doing a virtual check-in and all those people are sat around me, fantastic. Like, it just makes an online experience feel more real and feel more engaging. I'm going to continue paying longer. I'm going to want to refer my friends to it. So I think until AI or until software removes the need for like the looking bad in front of a person, I think any tech development will just make it better. I think the tech will just adapt and improve, and we'll just be able to, we'll have all these tools to use. What I think will struggle, which, and people will kick off at this, I'm sure this will get clipped. What I think will struggle is face-to-face personal training, because that is getting less and less valuable as the online version is becoming more and more like having a face-to-face interaction with someone in a gym. If I can do that from home, why am I going to like sit in traffic on a morning and go out in the cold and go out when it's frosty and I have to defrost my car and my hands are cold on the steering wheel?
Suddenly it's instant access.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great point about the looking stupid in front of another person, because the core things that really cause someone to stay with you as when you're an online coach are accountability and community. And those two things are so powerful. And really the tech is just making that more powerful. It's just making it easier to do and making it more convenient for the client. We get two types of fears around software, like not us personally, and we like people commenting on our ads and like people that message us and they're worried about this. The first one is like, oh, online coaching's dead because AI is just going to replace all the online coaches and we'll be out of a job. And it's like, AI is only going to replace the bad online coaches that are basically just doing macro adjustments. Like, mm-hmm. It just means that you have to step up your game a little bit and be more of a human coach. The other fear is, well, how do I know that I'm using the right software? And I need to make sure that the client has the software, and I have to, you know, make sure that my Google Sheet is like this and my delivery is sort of like, really, the client doesn't care. And if they did, you should be worried, because if the client is only signing up with you because of your software, then you've got bigger problems.
Yeah.
So really, software, platforms, delivery, all that stuff, it's just a vehicle for you to interact as a human with your client and to do that human coaching relationship. And nothing's really going to replace that. Like, yes, there's things you can do to make some of the delivery more efficient, but it's still you at the end of the day that they're buying. People buy coaches, not coaching.
The people who worry about like online, or the people who say like, oh, I'm like, we get this on ads all the time. Like, it is the opinion of me and my fellow trainers that online coaching is a ripoff. Like, okay.
It's always written like that as well.
Yeah. Like, or like as an S&C coach for the last 15 years, it's like, respectfully, no one gives a fuck like what your background is. Like, the comment is still just a comment on Facebook ad. But like the email I wrote the other day is like, if you sit down and ask that person, like, what do you think of VShred? They'll go, oh, that guy, that fucking guy on YouTube, he's always on YouTube. I haven't got a fucking clue what he's talking about. One of my clients bought this thing. They are making like minimum 8 figures a month selling that product online. So what is it that they have figured out that you, with your 15 years of S&C experience, haven't cracked yet? And what is it that, like, when is the online coaching's failing gonna hit VShred, right? They aren't worried about that. But there are millions and millions of people buying online coaching, using bits of software, signing up for group programs online, signing up for one-on-one coaching online. So, and it's the same thing with the AI shift. So people see like, oh, ChatGPT is going to take my clients. There's two ways to approach that. One of them is like, how do I take advantage of the software to improve my coaching? And the other is just like, la, 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 like, it's all bullshit. AI is not going to do anything. Those are the people who are going to be out of a job in 5 years' time.
Precisely. Yeah. It's not, you won't be replaced by AI. You'll be replaced by people who know how to leverage AI. So we had a great chat with Mike Isretel a few months ago, and who kind of mentioned something similar to that point, Johnny, which was like, well, you were there, so I don't know why I'm addressing you with this. This is for theatrical purposes. The whole mentality of like, build it and they will come. Like, well, I've been an S&C coach for 15 years and I know all this stuff. So, you know, it just creates this like bitterness that people aren't buying my program and they're buying VShreds and, you know, it's everyone else's fault. It's like, well, no, it's your fault for not communicating that to the market.
Like the video you did about summarizing Anton Creel's video that got reshared by Anton Creel. Round of applause for Yusuf. There's one thing that he says in it, which is like, or I'm going to butcher this, but paraphrasing, if you like complain about like the rules of the world, like you are the problem. Like it is not the game, it's not the parameters that are the problem, that what you think is the issue, you are the issue. So like you either participate in the game as it's evolving. So like the fitness industry is going to be impacted by ChatGPT, AI, all these developments. You either say, no. The qualification that I did 10 years ago at university that speaks about like BOSU balls and all that bullshit, that's what's going to last. ChatGPT is a scam. The only person who's going to experience the negative consequences of that is you. And it's the same with whatever an AR headset, let's say that becomes the norm in 10 years time. If you've decided that it isn't, it's not going to change the shape of the industry. It's just going to change your business, no one else's.
Yeah, you can opt out of the game, but you're also opting out of the results from that game too.
Yeah, yeah.
The final thing that we've actually just got a comment on this morning, and incidentally, I've just set up an account. So at the time of recording this, Threads by Meta, which is basically Facebook Meta's answer to Twitter, so it's a clone of Twitter, has just launched in the UK. And one of our clients basically said, like, should I set up an account? Is it a distraction? Is it a waste of time? Or should I be getting on this early? And I want to give a bit of context for how to make this decision. Meta know what they're doing. Like, they've seen something in the way that Twitter is running. They thought, we want a piece of that. If you set up an account, it's linked to your Instagram profile. You can basically share your content as an online coach through text medium. They've probably also caught on to the fact that on Instagram, one of the most popular, highest performing types of content is screenshots of tweets, which is really ironic. So they're going to really push this, and they're going to probably push the cross-sharing between Threads and Instagram as well. Yes, there's a first mover advantage for you to get on it, just like there was with LinkedIn or TikTok or anything. Like, Gary Vee's always talking about this. He says, like, whenever something's new, don't turn your nose up at it, just join in, get on it first. But it's another bloody platform to have to manage. It's another thing that you're going to have to take up your bandwidth. So get it onto a scheduler as soon as possible and treat it as a small bet. Don't use it as another way to procrastinate from doing the important stuff. So yes, they have a good chance of taking over Twitter. If you've got a Twitter presence already, it's very easy to repurpose your content over. But also, don't get kind of blinded by the flashing lights. TikTok has made us £12 out of 25,000 followers.
£12.99,
sorry. Oh, yeah, we're in the big bucks, really.
I mean, in percentage terms, that's quite an increase.
So organic impressions are not always valuable. So that's my answer with an organic hat on. With like a, is this actually worth your time hat on, you've just got to remember, have you got a reliable way to generate leads long term? Organic stuff is the long game. It's not going to get you any consistent growth or consistent clients early on, unless you're very lucky, and that's not a way to run a business. So 90% of your efforts right now, if you're an online coach and you've got less than 30 clients, should be on cracking the ads and the outbound marketing until you get that nailed, and then you can focus on doing a podcast or writing threads or whatever else.
Well, with that, I'll put my paid hat on.
Oh, yes.
So from an ads perspective, when I see stuff like that, it's great news, because really all that's happening, if we look at like all of Meta's products, so you've got like Instagram, Facebook, Reels, Stories, Feeds, Marketplace, which is like the dregs of the internet, like the word. Imagine like the stuff that even like the rag and bone man doesn't pick up, that you leave outside your house, and it's like, this is all
no one like, touches it for weeks.
They're like, whoa, mate, like that's, but anyway, so there's like all these places you can run ads on, and the price of running an ad, which is the CPM, is determined by supply and demand for that placement. The problem that YouTuber doesn't have, because there are like more videos put on YouTube per minute than anyone can ever watch at any one time, they have an expanding inventory that places everyone advertisers can run ads on. Facebook have a fairly fixed inventory. So like, there's only so many like scrolls of the feed you do. There's only so many stories you watch. There's only so many times that they can like get an ad to appear. When they launch a new space, like something like this, they're just increasing the supply which in turn temporarily drops the price. So the best way to take advantage of something like this, it's like some people who say, like, how do I use Instagram to make sales when I've only got 100 followers? It's like, well, someone has 1 million followers. Like, the only advantage they have over you is that when they post something on Instagram, more people see it. That's it, really. And yes, they have some brand equity and things like that, but we can simulate that by just paying Instagram. Just, here's my best stuff. Show it to 1,000 people today, please. No problem. I'll do it. And you don't have to do anything. So when they launch something like, what's it called?
Threads.
It won't be long before that becomes a ad placement. So instead of worrying about, like, oh God, what's my content strategy for this? Just think, okay, I know I've got this ad that works. I'm going to make an Instagram Reels version of it. I'm going to make an Instagram feed version of it. I'm going to make a Instagram story version of it. Now I'm going to make a Threads version of it. And I'm going to just take advantage of the new eyeballs on that platform. So back to Yusuf's point, if you just have a strategy, which is like, when I run this ad to this sort of person and they opt in and go through this funnel, percentage of them buy, and the whole economics of that is profitable, you just don't have to worry about any of this. It's just Marky Mark, our mate Mark, Zuck, just going, hey guys, thought about putting that ad on here instead. Like, thanks, Mark.
Yes, please.
So kind of you. So
that's a great perspective. So it's another space for the auction to, and it's going to be cheaper to begin with as well.
Yep.
For the impressions. So,
and it also means, because Facebook's done this with a couple of things, like, they, over the years anyway, they've like launched something new and then it just kind of fizzled out. And I think having that view of, like, I'm just going to run ads to it, takes the risk that you spoke about away. Of like, if they launch something new and you're like, I'm going to double down on this. If it then vanishes in 2 months' time because the numbers haven't worked for Facebook, that was a lot of effort you put into something that has led to nothing.
Yeah, this is it. Like, people want the answer of, like, is Threads going to be successful? Like, is it worth me putting my time into? Like, well, no one knows. That's the job of speculators and investors. And obviously Meta have done as much as they can to try and make it a success. And they've got a big tailwind to be able to do that.
Mm.
But it might still collapse. Like, TikTok's always on the verge of getting banned by the US government, isn't it? So, like, I think your point is, like, don't put too many eggs in one basket and just treat all platforms as impressions. And sometimes they're easier to get, sometimes they're harder to get. Just throw everything out there. Use a scheduler to make your, because you're only one person, so you can't be going around, like, manually posting everywhere. You've got to leverage your time and then see where the cards fall.
Is that by then? That's by then.
Yeah, we've covered the big three. If you could call it that.
Hot topics.